And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAR. This is the Hurling Show. We have Conal, we have Damien, and we have Mikey here on a Thursday. So we have four here for the first time in a while. All right, lads, how's it going?
Yep.
So we have Richie Power, lads, writing during the week, and we have Henry Shefflin. And Richie Power says, I hate saying it, but I think it is. This is when he's asked, is the All-Ireland out of the question for Kilkenny? And Henry's on the kind of same lines. You know, it's not looking good for Kilkenny, but I think we need all our players playing. We have a couple of injuries which we're carrying at the moment. So making a couple of excuses, but saying it's not looking good for Kilkenny. Is it not looking good for Kilkenny, lads? We've talked about it on the show on Monday. Is it too soon to write these off as All-Ireland contenders? Conal, I'll go to you first.
I think it is. I think it's too... Obviously, they haven't performed well. I think their main leaders haven't performed well in the last couple of games. But there's still a couple of lads maybe to come back. You know, we think we talked about it off-air there. Like, Fenley would be a huge addition. I haven't seen Richie Hogan play as bad as that in a long while.
They say he's having fierce problems with his back.
Could do.
Yeah, there has to be a reason, because he's not the Richie Hogan. Like, I mean, he's not influencing the game at all.
No, he's not. And look, there's no doubt that they won't be favourites for Ireland, and they'll be under a little bit of pressure. Maybe a nice favourable draw is probably what they're looking for, to get back on the horse a little bit. But in saying all of that, and in saying how good Wexford were the last day and how poor Kilkenny were, Kilkenny had their chances to get a few goals, and okay, the keeper made a couple of good saves, and if they got those goals, I'd say they would have beaten Wexford on the day, but they didn't, and that's the way it goes. But I wouldn't be writing them totally out yet.
Yeah, what do you think, Damien? Because, like, I mean, the story now, and we mentioned even on Monday, is that Cody's tactics are outdated. But then you look at how well Colin Fenley played from the high ball that went in. You know, I think hitting high ball into a sweeper is stupid in general, but it seemed to work out for them on Saturday night, only with Fenley.
Yeah, well, just on that, Colin, sometimes I'd have to agree that I do think that sometimes Brian Cody's tactics are gone outdated, you know. But then I say to myself, he's got a very young backroom team, to be fair to him as well, you know, and they're very much in up to date with the modern game, you know. But just on last Saturday, you know, a lot of the Kilkenny players and their big name players didn't play well. You know, Walsh, who I'm a huge fan of, you know, Richie Hogan didn't play well. Like, and these are all their top players. Like, and they really effectively only had three good players on the day, which was Killian Buckley, Finlay, and TJ Reid. You know, but saying that, we said at the start, they needed to find a number three. They needed to find a number six. They tried stuff during the league. And, like, to say that Pádraig Walsh was playing fullback for the whole league, and, like, I actually don't really know where he played last Saturday, but it looked like he was wing forward and full forward, because he was beaten to the ball by the Wexford fullback, who came up the field and scored a point. So, like, he's played all the league at fullback, and next thing he's up in the forwards for this game. So I just have to question, where are some of these Kilkenny players? Like, you know, Joey Holden played fullback for Kilkenny for 2 seasons, okay, cleaned out by Seamus Cannon, but where is he gone? Michael Finlay, nobody knows. Is he back? Rumour is that he was training. Rumour was he played challenge match. Rumour is that he's still injured. You have Blanchfield. In fairness, he seemed like a good find there for the last 2 seasons. Can't make the team. Pádraig Walsh, full back, up centre forward. Kevin Kelly starts the All-Ireland last year, corner forward. Scored a goal, missed another goal. Only brought on, right? Then you have John Joe Farrell. Where's John Joe Farrell gone? Like, he seemed to have had a good, you know, pretty good season, in fairness. Right? And then I spoke about this guy this year, saying, you know, I'd expect a big season from him. That's John Power, Richie Power's brother. Where's he? He's a big man. Where's he gone?
Yeah.
You know, and just all these questions are, where are these players? And they're just not the backline in particular. The Kilkenny backline are not the backline that I'm used to playing against.
But their forwards. Their forwards are... the forwards aren't carrying their weight either. I think Malachy Clark in the Irish Times had the stat that TJ Reid is, of the 7 goals and 114 points Kilkenny have scored this year, TJ Reid's got 556.
Right.
And 4 of the goals were penalties. So, there's an awful lot being asked to TJ Reid there. And as you say, there's the likes of Kevin Kelly, Blanchfield, Farrell, these forwards who, as Damien says, were doing a decent job last year. They're nowhere to be seen, and Joey Holden's disappeared to the Bermuda Triangle. I don't think there's anything weird going on, but there must be something awful wrong with these guys if they're not fit to be starting on a Kilkenny team that's very off colour.
Yeah, and they only scored 2 points from 12 scoring chances in the first half, which was, you know, a terrible return. But Joey Holden is an interesting one, before we move off this, is that he got roasted by Shane McAllenan in the All-Ireland final. But whose fault was that? Only Cody's, for leaving the poor chap on Callanan for the whole game. Like, I mean, and now he's gone written off as a fullback. JJ Delaney got wrote off in an All-Ireland final by Shane McAllenan. Now, JJ came back in the replay and got the better of Callanan that day. But, like, I mean, on a one-off game like that, Shane McAllenan has done it to a lot much better players than Joey Holden.
Yeah, I think it's a bit harsh to disregard him for one bad game in an All-Ireland final. And that day there was so much space in front of him. Like, nobody, like, who's the best fullback Kenny had? Pat O'Neill, whoever, wouldn't have done any better that day. Like, so it's a bit much to disregard him. And I wonder, is that the case? Is he disregarding because he doesn't do it on the bigger days? I don't know. I really don't know, but I find it very strange that he's not playing now at the minute for a fella that was being teed up to be Kilkenny number three for a couple of seasons beforehand, and then all of a sudden that happens.
No, it's a very interesting one, because like you're saying here, the backs aren't of the required standard of what they used to be, and the forwards on paper are, but they're on paper is completely different than the form they're showing. They're just not. Walter Walsh isn't playing well at all. Richie Hogan's not playing well. You look across the team and you think, oh yeah, geez, that's still good.
Yeah.
TJ's not on the form that, like, from played and what when he's at his best. So Kilkenny on paper might look all right, but
can I come in there a second?
Of course.
Just for Kilkenny to go forward, I think Kilkenny need to do a huge shake up in their team. You know, they got beaten the other day, and the first thing to say is well done to Wexford. It was absolutely brilliant scenes after the match, and it was an absolutely super performance. But for Kilkenny to go forward, I'm going to put a spanner into the works here and go, I personally see on Sunday game, I see Jackie Turrell doing the analysis. And like I was saying to myself, what if Jackie Turrell was full back for Kilkenny last Saturday night, and you have Murphy one side of him and Fogarty the other cornerback? Like, they don't have a strong full back line there at the minute. And if I was Brian Cody, and I'm going to throw another spanner in the works, they're not getting the best out of Richie Hogan. So what would I do? I'd pull him wing back. I'd give him a new lease of life. So I would, and I'd put Pádraig Walsh back in his best position of wing back. He needs to throw spanners into the work and re-rotate his team. And just on TJ Reid, you were saying he's not at his best there at Oak Play. I thought TJ Reid last Saturday night, in my own opinion, was exceptional. I thought his work rate was incredible.
Yeah, he battled hard, but he's not troubling the scoreboard from play as much as he can only
do so much. But
yeah,
I think Brian Cody should be, there's some players that have left that squad 2 and 3 years ago possibly would be good enough to make the team
and
now,
then,
and likes Jackie Turrell. I don't know why Jackie Turrell was allowed. I personally have him full back on my team.
Yeah.
And
can I just stop
try
you?
Build a team around him.
Can I just stop you there and ask you about Richie Hogan at wing back? Because I'm obviously not a hurling person, but that would seem a bit too far left field for me.
The reason why I would put him back, he's not on the ball enough in the last couple of days, right? He hasn't been playing his best, right? So I would try give him a new lease of life. I know that Richie Hogan is a really, really good player, right? I would put him as a wing back and maybe get him as a sweeper and get him maybe playing even a role like Wexford have as a sweeper at the back, like this, and try get him into the game, try to get his confidence back up, try get him on the ball, try again, just to give a new lease of life. They need something, and it'll all go down to their draw. Look, we all know, Colin, it's not going to happen, right? But I'm only giving an example. But I bet you one thing, if Richie Hogan was listening to this podcast, he'd say to himself, geez, you know something, I wouldn't mind, and I'll run back, wing back, and get man to ball, because it's just not happening for him, and all he needs is a change.
Conal, you've made that transition. You're shaking your head there with the Richie to wing back.
Yeah, no, I think it would prove very difficult for him. Like, it's easy to say, okay, I can see what he's saying to try and give him a bit of new lease of life, but it's harder than that, because if you're wing back, you have to nearly concentrate on who you're marking to a degree. You can't really go back, float back too much and hope to get a few balls and lash it up, because I think really what would rejuvenate him is a free role going forward more than so many times I've seen him on the weekend there. He was back in his own 21. Like, what's Richie Hogan doing back there? Like, there's other lads that can do that. Like, he should be told, if you're midfield, go midfield, don't go any further past that, and you the license to go forward all the time, because we need you to get the scores, which he's been doing over the years.
A qualifier against, sorry to say it, Leash or Offaly either now could be just a job for TJ Reid or Richie Hogan, rack up a cricket score and then everything's rosy in the garden again. And if it is a matter of confidence, that might be, well, it depends on the draw, but it might be a more straightforward approach than sticking him wing back, which I don't think might work either.
No, I wouldn't be sure, but you wouldn't know. But the thing about his Richie Power saying that he's been destroyed with a back injury, so you know what I mean? Maybe we're not talking about a player that's running, that's 100%, and he hasn't been 100% this year yet. It's not like, you know, he's coming off bad form or good form. He's been flat all year, and maybe if he's carrying a back injury, I'm sure, a back injury is probably the worst injury you can have.
He's a soldier as well, isn't he?
Yeah, he spent
some time. He might get a lot of relief.
Spent some time in the.
But just on that, I think what I find very funny is the past players coming out and being very critical of the management and very critical of their teammates that they played with. Like, okay, it's fine, and it's fine to be critical of other teams, you know, but lads that are still mates with them, lads that they know what it's like to be in the camp and to hear other people outside criticising them, I just find it's too easy for likes of Owen Larkin and maybe, okay, Shefflin to a degree wasn't as harsh, but Richie Power coming out, you know, I certainly wouldn't like it if I was in the squad and someone was, you know, a past player, I did it and started criticising what's going on. You know, you can be critical, but you don't need to criticise the management and be so, in, you know,
harsh. Brave men being see that critical well, see, of that's, Brian Cody. Yeah,
why are they doing that though? Is there an underlying issue?
There could be. Sure. Well, that's the thing. That's always the very difficult transition you have to make if you want to do punditry, because it's sooner rather than later you're going to have to talk about your ex-teammates, you know, and that's the difficult decision. And, like, I mean, you've transitioned to punditry at a pretty bad time with Dublin because they're bloody in disarray since you left. So, like, you're really
someone
screwed.
It was a good time.
Well, yeah, for your punditry career, no. For a nice kind of transition into retirement, Asher's grand. I've left a madhouse. That's fine. I don't feel too bad. That's Brian Whelihan. I want to talk about him because he has been given a role,
Hall of Fame, is he?
Hall of Fame. He's been inducted into the Hall of Fame, right? Jesus Christ, that's it. And he obviously is an unbelievable player, and some of the things he's won in the game, lads, has been absolutely incredible. Like, I mean, he's won 2 All-Irelands, which we all know about. He has won a whole load of... he's won 4 Leinster titles. He's won a National League. He's won 3 Welsh Cups, 2 Railway Cups, 3 Leinster Under-21, 2 All-Ireland Minor, 2 Player of the Year, 4 All-Stars. He's played All-Stars at wing-back and he's got All-Stars at full-forward. He's won... This is one of the best ones. He's won 7 Leinster Club Medals. He's won 4 All-Ireland Club Medals. Now, this will tell you when you're going down through a roll of honour how much stuff they're putting on it. So you go all the way down here to the very bottom.
Did he?
No, he won 1 All-Ireland Community Games football bronze in 1982. This is on the press release, so it's a classic, but...
Did I not mention that it probably is, well, what I always remember Brian Whelan for, wasn't he the only active player to be named on the team of the Millennium?
Which was a hell of an accolade, wasn't it? An incredible one. Someone so recent. He also has 2 Offaly Under 14 A Football Championship medals in 1982 and 1984. And
big ones.
Has 1 Ogue Sport Offaly Under 15 F medal in 1983. So, like, I mean, talking about an all rounder. But I want to talk about Brian Whelan, lads, and players in the 90s that I think I started following hurling properly in 1995. Ask me anything before 1995 and I'm not really sure even who won All-Ireland. But Clare, the romance of Clare got me onto the hurling thing. Yeah. So I'm pretty much on top of everything since 95. But Whelihan was brilliant and he was an all-action wing back, and then the year he went up and beat Kilkenny on his own at full forward. I just remember Brian Whelihan, Colin Lynch, you know, these fellas at the late 90s that you were really like, Jesus, these lads are absolutely brilliant. But, like, I mean, you and Damien obviously played the game. Who would have been your main men back then?
Well, the main man for me, obviously, would have been Joe Cooney. I've said it so many times. My dad was from Galway. I was a big, huge Galway supporter for years up until recently.
Until they came into Leinster.
No, like, I used to watch, you know, video every single game of Galway for... I say in the morning, I used to get up, watch Galway play and watch how he did everything, and, you know, I watched every single thing about him, and I knew every little detail about him at the time, and that was who my hero was growing up in hurling. And I think he was probably one of the best hurlers, you know, still to this day. But just on Brian Whelan, I remember
Been up there with you then, because his career would have been similar to you, you know what I mean? Versatile player, wing back, in the forward.
I didn't win half of that now, like, but I remember playing against him a couple of times, and, you know, obviously you've seen him growing up, he was, you know, such a legend in the game, and I remember I was lucky enough to play with the Leinster team that we won the Railway Cup in Rome at the time, and I was on my own early on the squad. I didn't know anyone, and he treated me like as if he was his brother. It was unbelievable how friendly and how welcoming he made me, and the same with all the Offaly players, but him in particular. Like, I was just found so strange that, like, why would he bother coming over? Like, I was sitting at the airport ready to go because we were late because we both had club games, so he just came over, sat down, started talking to me straight away, which I couldn't believe, and he just brought me around for the whole weekend, which was unbelievable for a fella like that. I couldn't get over it. I was only 18 at the time.
Yeah, sensational stuff. What about you, Damien?
Colin, when I was in the 90s, I suppose the one player that I used to love watching, and I was a bit like yourself, I had a huge romance with Clare, and I used to love watching James O'Connor. It was because he was a forward, and he was a real attacking player, and he was great on the ball, and he had a flair, and he had a great shoulder run and strike, you know. But that's who I used to love watching. And even the last point James, he scored in the 97 All-Ireland final, was just unbelievable. And I often just cornered there saying, you watching clips, like, I don't know how many times I watched that clip where James, he just broke onto the ball and rose and drove it over the bat, and next thing he was looking down at the back of the goals telling the umpire to put it up, you know, that there was a score. I don't know, did anyone ever know that? But looking down is behind the goals telling the umpire to wave the flag. But just on Brian Whelan, like, we're only 20 miles from Burr, you know, so, like, I actually would know Brian Whelan. I was often in his pub, so with him, just he's just, like, there's, without doubt, he's a legend of the game. So he's, you know, you could cycle over the Burr, it's that close to us, you know. And I suppose one thing about Brian Whelan is something that I always like about players. He was an unbelievable county hurler, but he was also an unbelievable club hurler, and he was an unbelievable club man, and they were an unbelievable club family, you know. And, like, he played with all his brothers, and his dad was the manager and everything. And I suppose I'm honoured to say that I played against him in the Club All-Ireland final in 2008. And, like, you're on about fertility or, you know, in and out, but he played wing back and he played full forward. But that day he was playing centre forward, and he was marking one of our lads called Michael Ryan. And unfortunately that day for him, even he said in the dressing room after the match that he lost his cool and he got sent off at the end of the match. But the way he spoke to us afterwards was just brilliant, you know. And like, he got on the team at the Millennium. He was just an unbelievable player, like, even playing a wing back, the speed he was able to run at and all that. But yeah, absolutely top player, top Offaly hurler. So he was, and as I said, we were delighted to say that I played against him in the Club All-Ireland final.
Isn't that a real weird transition to make when you come up to an intercounty team and you're making your debut? I made my debut in 1998, and pretty soon I was playing against Graham Geraghty, who's my hero. You know what I mean? Paul Curran was still playing for Dublin. Yeah. You know what I mean? And suddenly you're in the dressing room or against players that were your idols when you were 15 and really impressionable. Yeah. And next you meet you beside them. It's almost like starstruck being on the field, that you actually have to get over this and go, here, I'm their equal now. But, yeah, mentally you have to tell yourself that they're equal.
Yeah, it is hard. It is very hard. And I remember one bit of advice, I don't know who it gave to me when growing up, it was like, we talked about that, I remember, as young lads getting onto the team, and some lads were in awe at the time at the football of Kieran Whelan and Jason Sherlock. And it was like, the best thing to do, if you see them on the field or you see them in Clubwick, go over and give them a belt, and you'll soon get over it because they're going to hit you back. So that was one way. But no, it can be difficult, but you just have to adjust it. And I think if you really believe in your own ability, you know, you'll know that you want to prove to yourself how good you are. You want to prove to those lads that you're good enough to be there as well. So, and then you obviously, if you really are ambitious, I think you want to be saying to yourself, well, I want to be better than them. When you get to that point, you want to get more, you want to win more, you want to be on the team more, you want to be influencing games more than they did, which is very hard to do sometimes.
Yeah, okay, Mikey, I'll ask you about your heroes in the 90s, but you've followed him, you've Martin Story.
No, mine's Kilkenny Man.
All right.
Actually, yeah, it's some kind of sadistic
sacrilege
thing. I know, yeah. We see, it would have been all watching games live for me in the early 90s, I suppose, and I just remember that Kilkenny team that repeatedly beat Wexford. There are some great players, but the O'Connor brothers were hateful. Yeah. DJ Kerry was too flashy altogether, and he took 17 steps every time he got the ball. Charlie Carter was kind of similar.
Charlie was a legend.
He was, but he wasn't my favourite. My favourite was John Power, by a distance. Centre forward, hard as nails.
Yeah.
Must have broken every finger he had 20 times over. Would always come over ruck with a ball, and he just, like himself and Liam Dunne, used to beat the shit out of each other. It was just wonderful to watch, and he just seemed honest. You got the impression that the Wexford lads liked him, and he was the most likable guy on that Kilkenny team. But the problem was, he was also, like, almost the most effective. He strung their entire attack together, and I never didn't enjoy watching John Power play a game.
Yeah, I think, Damien, this is where hurling snobs have got this manliness stuff from. It's from John Power, Mark and Liam Dunn. This is where this is where these battles started.
Well, Colm, did you ever hear the story about John Power? That seemingly Cody was training the team and John Power was after arriving a few minutes late, and Cody was after having a massive rant and saying that he's not good enough turning up late for training sessions and this has to improve and it wasn't good enough, and he was giving this big rant because John Power was after turning up late, and he turned to John Power and he was like, "What have you to say to yourself?" John Power turns back to Cody and goes, "Ah, we're not all school teachers." John Power was a farmer, like, but yeah, I even remember, was it the time Kilkenny played Tipperary? I think it was Tipperary, and John Power, and he getting his finger split open. It was against Tipperary, and he showing it to the referee, the blood coming out of his fingers. So it was, but yeah, John Power was a great player. I've often actually met him at matches. Not that I went over saying hello to him, but I just seen him in the distance going to games. But yeah, them teams were great players. The O'Connors from Wexford, as you said, the Guineys. Jeez, you couldn't mention the Wexford team without mentioning one of them Guineys. And then, as you said, you have John Power and Pat O'Neill and boys. Yeah, they were all hardy boys, Colm.
Yeah, jeez, it was. But it was the 90s in football and hurling. It was the best decade.
They were the days.
They were the days. I think it's just as your mind kind of, kind of focused on the 90s, because that's when you're a teenager and you're impressionable and these lads were heroes, and you just think I just think there's nothing like the 90s in either code. Like, there was just magical, the hurling with Wexford and Limerick and Offaly and all these teams, and then the football was all the Downs and the Donegals. It was just an incredible time for hurling and football. Am I being a bit biased in this?
No, but
well, 1990 was the year Cork done the double as well, which was never been done since, which was phenomenal. Then you had Clare coming of age, then you had Wexford coming of age, then you had Offaly coming of age, and I'm only just speaking of the hurling, so yeah, you're probably dead right, Colm, that it was great times. Like, you had the Dooleys then as well from the Offaly hurling, you know, the Dooley brothers, and it was brilliant times. You're right, you'd love another massive summer like that, and Wexford beating Kilkenny the other day has nearly kick-started us.
Yeah, okay. And in fairness to the football, or in fairness to the hurling, Wexford Waterford and Cork brought on a great rivalry into the noughties as well. But anyways, listen, we're going a bit too nostalgic there altogether. We'll be back. There is a game at the weekend, and a really bloody big game. It's Waterford and Cork, Galway and Offaly as well. I think that's going to be one-sided. But we'll talk about Waterford and Cork next.
Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year, and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. Beans. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. Beans. Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year, and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans.
Right, lads, the big news coming out of the Cork camp is Conor Lehan is only 50-50. He's after doing his ankle in training and he's in a race against time. And I know with ankle injuries were never injuries I really worried about, because you can strap them, especially when you roll your ankle. It's going to be sore, but the strapping is so strong. I'd be surprised if he doesn't start with just an ankle injury that he did last week. It's very rare you'll get an ankle injury that you can't strap up. Like, I've done awful damage to my ankle and played like 10 days later. I mean, you'll get through it. It's uncomfortable. So I'd say he'll play. But he is such an important player in this game. That's why I want to mention Conor Lehan, lads, because Tadhg De Burca, you know how important Tadhg De Burca is, dropping off his man and covering the full back line. But if Conor Lehan's playing centre forward, Tadhg De Burca won't be able to do that. So it's completely going to change the dynamic of how the teams approach this game, whether Conor Lehan plays or not, Conor.
Yeah, no, it will. And I think he'll definitely play. Like, if it's 50-50 today, there's no reason in the world why he's not going to play. Like, because I think, as you said, an ankle injury is easy enough to get over. You strap it up, you maybe take a couple of painkillers or an injection, whatever it is, and you worry about it then on Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah.
You'll be fine for the game. But I think he is a huge part of what Cork did of their victory the last day. But, you know, Waterford play a totally different style to Tipperary. They're not going to let you know, as much space and let him run around as much as he wants, and being, you know, going for those puckouts nearly uncontested a few times, you know, and his pace was huge going over and back the line. Waterford will have a couple of men back, you know, they're probably maybe being, you know, really concentrated on being defensive in the first 15 minutes to not let Cork get ahead of steam. So, you know, he is vital, but how much space are the Cork forwards going to get this day than Tipperary give them? I think the space is going to be very, very limited, and it's going to be very, very tight, and it'll be interesting to see what way it works out. But I think Cork are going to be under serious pressure in the forwards this weekend, because they're going to be one and two man Waterford every single time the ball is dropping around. You'll see Waterford absolutely hounding them.
Yeah,
like they have been doing over the years.
Lahan was I think it was 10 points got the last day. He was brilliant, but the best thing about that Cork performance was the fact it was all the forwards. They all performed. They played magnificently. He'd be a massive loss, but then you kind of look at who could come in. You know, you could get McLaughlin coming in midfield, and Cooper could go wing forward, or Daniel Kearney could come in. Lahan would be a massive loss, but you almost get a sense after just one game that this Cork attack, it's not a one man band, and they actually have some decent replacements. But I agree with you that Lahan's not going to have the space he had the last time, unless the whole league was a ruse and Waterford are taking it handy and are going to come out with an entirely new game plan and blow us all away.
Well, that's the thing. The talk last year was that Waterford moved away from their really defensive approach against Kilkenny, and it was a shootout. Now, I don't think that was the exact truth. I think Waterford played similar to they always did, but just that game kind of
opened.
But yeah, that it was a good match for them against the likes of Clare, will play like Waterford, and it looks bad. But Damien, you'd be very surprised if Waterford don't go back to their very defensive, flood the middle third, cut out the supply of ball, and go back to the Waterford, you know, the ultra, maybe one forward, maybe Shanahan, whoever they want to play, one up front. Because in fairness, Waterford rotate how many, sometimes they'll have three up there, then they'll have one, and it's always changing, and you're trying to stay on top of what they're doing. But you'd imagine that middle third is going to be full of blue and white jerseys to cut down that supply of Cork ball.
Yeah, I think you're bang on there, Colm. I don't see Waterford moving from their Derek McGrath system, the system that they're after coming up with. I'd be worried for Waterford on Sunday. I think it's a dangerous game. They haven't played in 11 weeks.
Yeah.
They played Galway in their last game in the league, where they put out what we call a second hand team. So that is, they're winning. They let Galway back into it, then they pushed on again, they took the foot off the pedal. That's 11 weeks ago. That game has kick-started Galway's season from being absolutely nobodies to now being All-Ireland contenders. So where are Waterford is what I'm asking. They've probably played lots of challenge matches. We all know what challenge matches can be like. They can be untrue. Some players will play well in challenge matches. It's not championship. And now Cork have beaten Tipperary in what would be a massive confidence booster. So I expect Waterford to pack the middle, have the likes of Shanahan or someone like that on the edge of the box and pump in an odd ball to him. He will be, the usual inside line will be starved with ball, but the Cork forwards won't get much room, you're right, but the Cork forwards have to man up to this again. You know, they have a great opportunity to get into a Munster Championship final, and then they have good players. Cadigan, I'm very, very impressed with Cadigan over the last two seasons. I feel he deserves a mention in this Cork attack. You know, Lahan has been brilliant as well, and just Kingston as well, you know, doing a great job that day. But if I was Water, I'd be worried. It's 11 weeks, no one knows, and they're the last team to play in this year's championship. So it's a dangerous game for them, for a team that everyone is talking of.
Yeah, I think you're spot on, Damien. The only thing I'd say is there's, like, they've planned for this, because they didn't want to go further in the league.
Yeah,
realistically,
that's the point I was going to make.
So they knew the draw, they knew the time, they knew they were going to have whatever 10 or 11 weeks. So they obviously had some plan in place. But there's no doubt, whatever plan, you can have all the plans you want, but when you come to just before the ball is running, you're always a little bit nervous going, I wonder how we're really going to play here, because it's been so long since we played a proper game, you know, and you can recall all the games in your head that you played well last year, the year before, but you're never really sure, and you're like, you kind of know that this Cork team now are good, they're different than what we met before, you know, they're going to come at us. But I'd say that's why they're going to go as defensive as they can for in the first while and keep it tight and harry and hassle as many of those Cork forwards as they want, because probably, in my own opinion, a lot of those Cork forwards are really lovely wristy hurlers and they're great men when you give them the ball. But what happens when they don't have the ball, you know, and you're giving them a little bit of, you know, a bit of a jab, a little, you know, being in their face, being really, really aggressive with them, which Tipperary never did. That's when Cork really kind of think maybe it's a little bit let themselves down a little bit, that they don't really stand up and man up a lot of the time. So I would say that there'll be that kind of a tactic that where they'll have so many men back Waterford and it'll be hugely aggressive and their work rate will be so high. Will Cork be able to manage to be able to get the space and get the scores that they did?
You say Waterford have a plan and they've, you know, 11 weeks and all that, but for 8 of those weeks were they planning for Tipperary? You have to wonder as well how much thought Dirk McGrath was putting into actually playing Cork, you know, or would he have played the odds and said we're almost certainly going to be playing Tip here, building a game plan, taking paternity work leave from work to build these game plans and everything else. I wonder, have they had to not completely change, but have things altered since that result in the first round?
Yeah, I would say Derek in his head would have been planning for Tipperary, but I wouldn't think he would have been saying it to the squad. You know what I mean? I wouldn't think he couldn't possibly do that. But like, I mean, it is a good point. There's no doubt about that. I'd say Derek McGrath, he would maybe might have waited until the Monday night after that game to reveal his tactics, but I'm sure he had to rip up the one that he was going to produce.
I don't think the tactics will change. Maybe personnel might change where they're going to play. You know, they might try and expose the Cork fullback a little bit, maybe for pace. And I don't know. They might just change a couple of players like that. But it made a little bit of difference. But it's not as if the game has sprung on him. Like, he still has a couple of weeks.
Yeah,
it's
3 weeks.
Time, you know?
Yeah, it's 3 weeks. The puckouts are interesting, right? Because Cork destroyed Tipperary in the puckouts, right? Their movement in the half forward line was outstanding. Their movement in midfield is outstanding. Nash is a sensational man to puck out a ball. Now, they set up so many attacks with that, right? And they ran amok on that. Now, because Tipperary probably just play that game man for man. What Waterford are going to do with Cork is they're going to have so many men in defence, they're just going to go, there's your cornerback, there's, Spillane. We'll give you him, Nash. Go short to him every time. We're leaving him. We're not. They're going to leave one or two lads for Nash, and it's going to be very tempting for Nash to go, there's a safe one there, and then the cornerback's going to drive it up the field where a few Waterford lads, or else Nash can go long if he wants, and Waterford will have two extra men. So the whole game plan of Cork had against Tipperary, Damien, is from the puckouts and launching their attacks from Nash, and all the analysis we did after that game about how great this weapon is, that weapon's going to be gone against Waterford.
Yeah, I agree with you. Nash will have to have a big game. That's basically what you're saying. Nash is one of their leaders now in this Cork team, and he's there a long time, so he's taken over from John Logue. The puckouts is going to be a big part of the game the next day, right? So basically, when Nash is going to strike the ball, he's going to have to strike to precision and strike to hand like this. So, but I think if the boys are going short, if he's going to be hitting the ball to the cornerbacks, so then he's going to be giving it to whoever, McDonald or Cahillan or Spillane, whoever. I think the boys are going to have to carry the ball a little bit and find the man. And I think Cork will do that. I just think Cork are a completely different team, Colm, to last year. I think that win over Tipperary will have brought Cork on an awful lot with confidence. So it will. And you're dead right. The whole middle section, the middle eight, as we call it, is going to be absolutely packed with bodies. So basically, there won't be that opportunity for Tinash to hit the ball into the, what we call, into space to the oncoming runner from Cork, right? But Cork will have devised a plan for this, and they will have spoken about it, and they will have come up with something. They might even start hitting the number five and number seven. Yeah. So they might, with balls, you know, they'll be going low and hard down the channel, maybe down towards centre forward or down towards one of the midfield. It'll be something like that. But yeah, it will be packed. It's going to be, Waterford are going to be no different in this game than they were in the league final last year against Clare. It's going to be, the middle is going to be absolutely packed, and it's all about carrying ball and offloading ball to runners and throwing it over there.
What do you think about the puckouts?
Yeah, I think it's going to be limited amount of long puckouts that he's going to do. I would feel that the cornerbacks and the wingbacks are going to have a huge role in it by coming towards them a little bit more. So if the Waterford that kind of middle eight where that crowd are, if they push up on them, well then that's fine. You can go a little bit long, but if they don't, just give it to number five and give it to number seven, or even the cornerback, where you're working it out nice and kind of nearly nice and slowly until the Waterford lads are kind of drifting out towards you a slightly bit in order to get the ball in behind them into Cadigan and to maybe Horgan inside for a bit of pace inside and hit it in there, and that's where they want to get the ball quickly.
Yeah, do you take a kind of the Gaelic football approach to it? Do you play it short and kind of try and draw Waterford out? You know, those Cork backs, they play well the last day. Is Kingston thinking like that? That, you know, yeah, okay, we'll use the cornerback, and instead of the cornerback just doing what what Nash is going to do and drive it long. Actually, let's kind of play it out from the back. It's, you don't see it very often in Hurling, but at the same time, is there a way to kind of, as you say, kind of suck the Waterford defence out a bit and kind of create a bit of space and
well,
then play it?
See, that's the danger, but is not the temptation for the cornerback that gets that and he'll go, right, I'll carry this up a little bit, and then he goes, Jesus, that middle third looks a little bit congested for me, like this might not go to hand. So then he'll say, right, I'll go long for the safe option, and he goes long as a safe option, and then it's a break to Burka, and next one is back down on top
of
him
again.
Yeah,
but you have to make sure that if the cornerback is getting the ball, you know, you have to say to him, either you give it back or you give it to your wing back, or else if you're carrying it, you do not hit it into that zone. If you think you can hit it the whole length and give it into Horgan into space in there, well, fine, do that. But you're absolutely not to hit it into that zone, because if you hit it into that zone...
If there's Mara Shanahan in, yeah, it, on his own up front for Waterford, you do have that bit of
he's
scope.
He's gone away from Shanahan, though, hasn't he? Like,
I just
Shanahan,
mean whoever, no, Mahoney or whoever it is.
Yeah. We've said, Damien, on the show loads of times, if you're going to play one man up front, you play Mara Shanahan. Because, like, I mean, maybe he's not the fastest, but like, he's big, he's impressive man physically, and he can win his own ball. And if you're going with that one man, which I think Waterford might do on Sunday because it's Cork they're playing and they're so impressive up front, like, I think Shanahan has to be the man, especially with Devine gone as well.
Yeah, well, if you're playing one man up front, I couldn't agree more to Colin that you need to have a big man in it, and a big man in on the edge of the square, so that if you are going route one, you have a big man that has a possibility of catching the ball like this, you know. But they have gone away from Shanahan. It's gassed, like, he was an all-star 2 years ago. Last year he couldn't make the team. Mahoney came back in. Derek McGrath favoured him, so he did, for the free taking. So he did. So, I presume that Morris will be starting. We can't guarantee that because of the whole squad numbers that the Waterford players have. Where I think Morris wears number 25. Like, they don't actually go by numbers; they go by squad numbers. So, I just presume that they will go with him. But you know what I'd love to see, column is, so I'd love to see Cork going ahead in this game, right, from the start off, right, and I'd love to see Nash poking the ball out to either of these two cornerbacks, right, McDonald or Spillan, right, and one of the cornerbacks poking it straight back to Nash and draw them, or and Nash sprints out with the goals that 10 or 15 yards and launch it, drive it straight all over the traffic straight into the number 14 position. I just love to see then what would happen if that was to work out. Would Waterford then have to start pushing up the cornerback?
Right, so Nash is robbing himself 14 yards there to really drop it in on the edge of the square, which isn't a bad one.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
So basically, puck it to Spillane, a cornerback. Spillane gets it, Nash runs out. Spillane hits it straight back to him. He's passed down the 21 yard line, and Nash absolutely launches it off his left hand side down and hits the edges of it completely. Bypasses all the traffic and goes straight into full forward. Then what happens?
Yeah,
and I just, you know, sometimes you have to think a little bit differently, but someday it's going to happen where the cornerback's just going to get and give it back to the goalie.
Yeah, that makes sense to me anyways, just hearing it like that. But does Pat Horgan have the ability to kind of do something with that bomb?
No, I don't know, that's the question. But I think if Waterford are smart, I don't think they'll play one up front. They might play Shanahan, but they'll play a runner with him, like a fella that's fairly, you know, able to get over and back with him over the cross the line. Because if they do that, they cut off, you know, a lot of the short options, and then they're going to have an extra man back there anyway. So they cut off the long one, you know. So what is Nash going to do? Is he going to hedge his bets and give it to the cornerback, and the cornerback is panicking that someone's absolutely tearing down his back? So if I was that, I wouldn't just play one. I'd play two. Especially for the puckouts, okay. He may drop into the kind of the hole, if you like, out kind of centre forward position as the play is moving on, and you have Maris then for attack. But definitely for those puckouts, I would play two up front and then make them over and back. That give Nash absolutely no option. And if the option is to cornerback, well, let's put him under serious pressure.
Yeah,
no cornerback realistically ever really wants to get that ball, and that ball has to go to hand. If it doesn't go to hand, they're in trouble.
Yeah. No, listen, isn't it interesting, Les? And
Colm, just on that again, Colm. You're saying if Nash hits it long, you're saying would Horgan be able to deal with it? Horgan is not their target man for a high ball, so it's Harmony.
Right.
When they're driving the ball long, he will be on the edge of the square for Cork, right, and he's able to catch ball. There's a bit of breeding in that lad's footer. There's a bit of pedigree. His mother won All-Ireland medal, so he's able to hurl that lad's footer. And they'll be poking the ball long to 14, trying to expose the full back line in Waters, and it's Harmony that they'll be hitting with the long ball for catching on the edge of the square, and Harmony is able to catch ball.
It's not donkeys you're talking about with the breeding now. This is hurlers.
No. He's mother won an All Ireland medal sided in Camogie. There's a bit of breeding in that lad, and I think he's the first player. I think he's the first player to win an All Star in his club. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Is he?
And he's a good bit of stuff.
Didn't Jimmy Barry Murphy pull him out of a junior club or something, and no one heard of him?
That's right.
Emma Killey.
He played.
And what age was he when Jimmy Barry pulled him out of the, like I think he was 24 or something that hadn't gotten a look in. So he's such a good player. It's strange that you're just Jimmy Barry just found a rough diamond, and that's Seamus Harnedy.
He knew about the breeding.
Turns out had breeding as it turns out. But come here, Derek McGrath's really playing it down, and it's interesting. And Damien, you alluded to it, and we don't know where Waterford are. And you know, Derek's talking about, there's a genuine pragmatism in Waterford now, a realisation that we're not as good as we think we are, but we're in the chasing pack and we're capable of beating a big team on a given day and sustaining that over a consistent period. I genuinely think they completely sailed through that league. They wanted to do well in it, but they experimented, and all he wanted to do was stay up. Like, you can twist this another way and say that Waterford had a brilliant Galway team almost bet with their B team, as well, you know what I mean, as well, if you really wanted to. But I genuinely think that Waterford are in the long grass, you know what I mean? They're this has been their focus the whole year. Derek McGrath has gone full time. I really think that Waterford are primed for this, and I think the fact that Derek's playing it down, he talks about their under 21 and that everybody says, oh, many of the under-21s are going to come up into that senior team. And Derek's answer to that is, they're already there. They've been there for the last 2 years. Yeah. You look at the under-21 All-Ireland team, anyone worth coming off that team is already in the team. So it's not like that's giving them a boost. We have what we have. Nobody new is coming in, and we're working with that panel.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything really to hide in any of that. And he's probably... Look, this is a massive year for Waterford. It's probably a massive year for Derek McGrath as well. It's something, you know, they have to nearly reach an All Ireland final, or at minimum, you know, for a success. They would consider a successful season. I don't think they were really interested in the league, to be honest. And that was very evident in the Galway game.
Yeah,
they just have a big focus. They wanted to try a couple of things, get a couple of new players, and I think this is the game that they... It doesn't matter who the opposition are, this is what they're targeting, this first round of the championship for a long, long while, and to get into a Munster final. And I can't see Cork beating them on the weekend. I think this Waterford team are too mature, and their game plan is really, really good when it works. And if they could just get enough scores, but getting to a Munster final then, it'll be huge for Waterford, but I think this is a massive year for them, and I really believe that they're going to beat Cork on the weekend.
Yeah, well, there's the first prediction done down there anyways. You're going for Waterford. Mikey, what do you think?
I'm torn on this one because I think Cork were very impressive last night. I don't think it was a flash in the pan. I think they have series fours. I think they've sorted out their defence. We've spoken about Nash. On the other hand, Waterford showed last year that they're inches away from being All-Ireland champions, or at least finalists, but they haven't played in 11 weeks. So I'm going to go with form that we know of, and I'm actually going to say Cork are going to beat them.
You're going to go for Cork, right? Okay, Damien, what do you think?
Well, I said that I think that Waterford is going to be my biggest disappointment this year. You asked that question earlier on in the season, and I'm sticking with it. I think it's a dangerous game. I'm going with Cork. They're on about forward power. Sometimes I question whether Waterford have the forward power to win these games. There's a huge over-reliance on Mahoney for free-taking. They're still up in the air about the form of Austin Gleeson. So I do, even though I believe Austin will still put in massive performance on Sunday. But I think this Cork team, there's something in them this year now. They're out to prove something. So they are, I think the management are out to prove something as well. I think they've trained very hard. They've proved it. They've beat Tip. They've used confidence going behind them like this. So I think it's a dangerous game for Waterford. I just wonder, did you ever hear the saying, sometimes you might think you're too smart? And I question whether Waterford maybe might be, you know, maybe I'll eat my own words on this, but maybe they might be a little bit too smart playing what we call a B team versus Galway in the league, waiting 11 weeks. Cork have that championship game under them. I'm just going for Cork. I just I just fancy Cork, and that's who I'm going for, and I think there's another big performance in Cork.
Right, okay, so we have two for Cork. I'm going with Conal here. I'm going for Waterford. I think that all Cork's strengths, Nash number one, is going to be taken away from them. Their forwards are going to get no space. They're going to be choked. I think Waterford will outwork them. I think Cork will work hard making space for each other, but I'm not sure it'll work as hard tackling and hooking and blocking and doing all that nasty stuff in the middle third that Waterford pride themselves on. And I think it could be comfortable enough for Waterford. I think it'll be 4 or 5 points. I don't think Cork will have come up against a team like Waterford. The tip game was just made for them. You know, it's a shootout and it's so much space. We saw against Wexford and Kilkenny, that's not real championship hurling. While it was brilliant, it's not real championship hurling. And all these debutants for Cork, I think they'll get a real taste of what championship action. No disrespect for Tip, but I think Tip just coasted into that game, and I think Waterford will just choke the life out of them.
I would just I remember when we were doing our predictions, I do still think Waterford can win the All-Ireland, but I think this could be the year when the qualifiers become an absolute snake pit. It could just be absolutely fascinating, and I think they'll blow off some dirty diesel this weekend, and then I think they will really click. But I think Cork are motoring now, and that you know, form and knowing you're in form has to count for a lot in a Munster semi-final.
Right, okay, we'll be back in a second with some questions from Twitter.
After the match with with Marty Morrissey and the Marty squad, and you know, the big thing for me yesterday with Clare versus Galway was,
hang on, did you ask permission to do the Marty squad there?
Well, I didn't, but I was only a special guest. That Thursday you asked me the same question when I started Bubbles, and I said it yesterday on the Marty squad, that yes, I would have started Bubbles for that game yesterday. That was the first I heard of Johnny King coming back with the Galway squad. You know, I was asked this in the Marty squad.
Here, Damien, are you getting paid for Marty squad plugs on our show here?
That's three.
No, I do that completely voluntarily.
He hits it. He hits it. It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses! What a match!
Move away from the messing there, lads. Right, we have a serious show to do here. Right.
All right, questions from Twitter, lads. We have three here. Again, they were better than the football ones, which were shite, but the hurling ones were, at least we can get three usable ones out of it. I'm not even going to try and pronounce this fella's name. He actually tweets me on a regular basis. Some are, you know, a little bit strange, but this one was all right. His Twitter handle is @Paz_normal. Assuming Galway make the Leinster final, who do you put on Lee Chin? Damien, I'll give this one to you and the lads can give their thoughts then. Do you drop Cohen back on him, or do you have McInerney follow him?
So depending, if Lee Chin is playing centre forward, McInerney will pick him up. So he will, and if he's playing midfield, Johnny Cohen or David Burke will pick him up like that. If Galway wants someone to kind of man mark him, we'll say just in the half back line area, I believe they'll give the man marking role to Manuel. Now Chin is flying at the moment. He's hurling extremely well, and fair play to him and all that. But if he's, I don't think Galway will put what we call a man marker on him. But if they do, they'll go with Manuel and midfield Johnny Cohen and Porrick and David Burke. And if he's playing centre forward, it'll be McInerney.
Right, wouldn't it be some sight actually, lads? You'd pay the money in to see Lee Chin go toe to toe with David Burke. Just play your own game, lads. Let's see who comes out on top of this battle royal.
Yeah,
but that's possibly what would happen.
Yeah,
because that's one thing about David. He plays his own game, and what you can find is that both players would end up nearly, could end up kind of playing as a kind of a free role, sweeping role. So that won't happen. Just saying it straight out, Davy Fitz won't allow it to happen, because I know what will happen. Davy Fitz will have one of his midfielders playing pretty tight to David Burke on Leinster final day.
Right, okay. What's your thoughts on Lee Chin in general, Conor? Like, he was sensational the other night in the second half.
Yeah, he was very good. He caught some serious ball and he was involved in everything good for Wexford. I think he has improved as a hurler in no end since he first came onto the scene. I remember we played him a couple of times down in Wexford Park, and although he was a serious athlete, he was very much like our Stephen Heine, like both cute, really, really dedicated, you know, great athletes, But you know, when it came to the hurling, they probably let them down a little bit, and the touch and their striking wasn't great. But just look where Lee is now at the minute. You know, he must have put some amount of time and effort into
yeah,
his touch.
Because we were saying on Monday that the idea that he's an athlete has gone out the window now. That he's actually a hurler. You know what I mean? Yeah. He's a hurler now rather than this athlete that plays hurling.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think I was actually more surprised for him to be taking the frees, which was a huge thing, especially the long range ones. That just shows how much of he has improved and how much confidence that they have in him at the minute. Not just a leader, but to be able to take the frees from a good distance out and to nail nearly every one of them.
Yeah, I was waxing lyrical about him here the last day, but I did say after the Laois game that he was one of the poor Wexford players on the pitch against Laois. So I couldn't, I didn't have the best seat in the stand that day, so I couldn't tell you exactly what Laois did with him, but Kilkenny clearly didn't deal with him right. But that said, I think the form he was in last Sunday, I don't think there was a whole lot of living with him. But I agree with Damien, if himself and David Burke end up on each other, there won't be a whole lot of defending going on either side.
No, but I think Damien makes a good point there, that Davey's just not going to let that happen.
No,
Davey's too tactical for that. No. Lee Chin will be followed around.
Just on the end of the game column, just to anyone that's listening, I was just wondering, did any of you notice when the Wexford players came together, game over, everyone hugging each other and abs clapping each other on the back, right? This is just something I thought was very interesting. Lee Chin started a fist pump. Congratulations with all the players, and all the players came in fist pumping up in the air with him. And it just showed me how together the Wexford players were, but it just showed me how big of a leader Lee Chin was with the Wexford team. It was a fist pump of a cheer. About three or four of them like this, and it was just interesting. See, I don't know if you see it, but if you didn't, maybe look it up. It was just very interesting. But Lee Chin is the big, big leader in that Wexford team.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Right, lads, a bit more of a tactical one here. This is from JP at JP_MCG. When teams train and play against the sweeper, do the work on where the sweeper plays. Kilkenny looked clueless on Saturday night. What do you think of that? How much work, when you're playing against a team that has a sweeper, do you do about keeping it away from the sweeper?
A huge amount of work. If you're coming playing, say, Waterford the weekend, you know they're going to have maybe one or two there. So you're going to train the exact same way. You're going to have, as a forward unit, you're going to be marking, say, 7, 8, 9 defenders. You put in an extra lad there, and the lad's giving in the ball. No, if it's not on, if it's not on 80-20, don't give it, recycle it, keep going back and see can you get another chance at it, because I think that's the way to get. I think everyone does it, that's normal, and it even happens at club level even at this stage. But I would say teams definitely train for it and put a huge amount of time into it on the field and off the field, on blackboards and everything like that. They go into a huge amount of detail and trying to keep the ball away. But in saying all that, it's a totally different ball game when you're in the middle of a championship game,
and you need to get rid.
You need to get rid of it. You just want to get rid of the thing, yeah.
Right, okay, lads. Last one here is from Rory Henshey, and he asks, with Brendan Bugler and Austin Gleeson struggling for game time in 2017, are we seeing the decline of the fist pump in the modern game?
No way.
I didn't think Austin Gleeson was a big culprit for the fist pump. I thought it was where Michael Ryan has got it out of the Tipperary players. They don't do it anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
And they had gone to town on the fist pump. Did you get into the fist pump, or did you just avoid it?
Jeez, it was never really discussed. I often fist pumped a goal myself, when you score a goal.
Yes, Damien, 100%, that's 100% understandable now. I'm talking about the fist pump of the wing back who gets fouled, his jersey pulled, and he jumps around celebrating.
I think we gave a bit of flack, to Mannion last year, where he started fist pumping, so he did, where he won a free in his half back line 15 minutes into the game. So I think, no, I don't think it goes on as much, but Brendan Bugler is the captain. He's the hero of the fist pumps, where he'd win a line ball and he'd be fist pumping. But can I just go back to the last question, Corn?
No, stay on the fist pumping.
No, I want to do the sweeper. I can't understand when it comes to the sweeper, where the day is going to come where the centre forward on the opposition team is going to mark the sweeper. The midfielder goes to centre forward, the wing back goes to midfield, and the corner back goes to wing back,
yeah,
and just man mark their sweeper, because there's a reason why that player is left as a sweeper. I can't understand how opposition teams aren't man marking.
It's funny you say that, because we played Dublin in a Leinster final in 2007. Conal, you were playing, and if you remember it correctly, I'm pretty sure we started that game really well. I think it was 1-4 to 3 points. We were playing a sweeper, Brian McCormack, who's a real natural footballer, yeah, and he was cutting out all sorts of ball into your full forward line, into you, into Alan Brogan, whoever was in there. What did Pillar Caffrey do with 10 minutes to go in the first half? He moved Brian Cullen up onto the sweeper from centre half back and went with 7 forwards on one side and 5 against 5 on the other. Ye got 2 goals before half time. Mark Vaughan and somebody at Bernard Brogan. You went from being 4 points down to 5 points up. Game was over because Pillar had the bottle to go 5 at the back against 5 and let's move one up. And our sweeper, Brian McCormack, had to worry about Cullen instead of being able to sweep. Suddenly he was marking a fella who had, you know, who had the ability to play in the forwards, and Cullen set up one of the goals. So, like, I genuinely can't understand how teams who are favourites, you know, who trust their 5 defenders, don't push the sweeper up on the other sweeper.
Yeah, well, I suppose it was easy for Pillar to do at that time, and we knew we were going to win anyway. There was only Leash we were playing.
You were 4 down, you prick.
It's only the first half. We're only just getting the hill going.
Can I go back to the fist pump question?
Go on.
No, just the Lions the other day, didn't they get a lot of stick? They won a scrum towards the end, and the replacement prop was there, and he was fist pumping, and he was boxing everyone on the back, and they were really congratulating each other. And then the same replacement prop at that line out didn't lift who he was supposed to lift, and then he was getting absolutely slaughtered for that, because what are you doing? You only came on as a sub 2 minutes beforehand. There you are, fist pumping over a scrum in the middle of nowhere, and next thing you don't do your job. So I'd say a lot of hurlers maybe are a little bit concerned that fist pumping that line ball that you've won, and then maybe you cock up and your man scores 2-2 on you.
It's in decline. It's gone from out the field. Like, and for Jesus, I would be critical of the forward that scores a goal and runs back out like a robot and doesn't celebrate it. But, like, I mean, forwards should always celebrate, or celebrate an inspirational point by all means. The celebration of freeze around the middle third is gone, and I think that's a good thing, because I thought it was just gone to levels that were almost embarrassing.
Yeah, well, I think if you look at any of the Dublin football games now, I know when Pat Gilroy came in, it was a big thing about, like, not stop celebrating. What are you celebrating for? The game's not over. Like, get out into position, the kick out position. And if you watch any of the goals now that Dublin scored, they don't celebrate.
Yeah,
years ago,
I
you see Cozzy doing the guns to the hill and everything. And it was great cracking, you know, everyone was talking about what are you going to do if you score a goal and into the hill and everything. But them days are gone now.
Yeah. We used to analyse this before as well. Chris Conway scored a goal in the championship against Westmeath, and he did the canoe celebration. Yeah. Was that the guns with the canoe one? Like, I mean, this was all a thing, but, like, that's half the fun of it, though, isn't it? Like, it's joyless, because I've spoken to football show about, I think Bernard Brogan scored a goal in the league this year against Monaghan, and he just ran back out. This was a goal that got them right back in the game. Like, you could give one to the crowd, because Berno used to love cheering in front of the hill. He used to do a dance in front of the hill, and now he doesn't do it. So I was saying, this is a clear instruction from Jim Gavin not to celebrate scores, and I was saying that's joyless.
Yeah, I think it is a clear indication from the management not to do it. It's not to antagonise the players that you're marking. It's not to make it out that we're better than anyone else. So we're just here to play the game and win the game, and you can celebrate off the field when the cameras aren't there, fine. But it made out to be, you know, I think at that time when we were playing Leash in the Leinster finals and stuff like that, you know, lads were celebrating after nearly every point, and I was one of them as well. But it kind of antagonised everyone. Like, people were getting on our back. The other counties were like, look at this state, and what are they doing?
Yeah.
So I think when Ernie Pack came in, he cut all that, you know, get down and play the game and treat everyone with respect. And I think that's what they're doing at the minute. If you score a goal, you score a goal, but get out and let's get another one and keep going. And there's no celebrating, there's no saluting anyone, there's no saluting supporters. That's gone. And it's very rare that you see it now, a Dublin player doing it.
It's kind of a shame.
You need a Jurgen Klinsmann to come in and just show everybody how much fun it is to celebrate a goal.
But you see, that's another good point, though, is that. The obvious point with obviously Klinsmann is that GAA, you can restart it immediately, so you're over soccer. You can do what you want with soccer, and it won't tip back off until you're finished your elaborate celebration. The ball could be the under end of the net, and you're doing your Klinsmann dive. I don't know. I think it's gone from one extreme to the other, Damien. That there has to be a happy medium. That Jesus, you should be able to celebrate big scores in championship games, and know yourself not to go overboard.
Yeah, exactly. You're bang on. Not to go overboard, and if you get a big score, by all means. And sometimes it's for your own confidence, you know, just to kind of, you know, clinch the fist, like, it's just letting you know. But in football, I know in football it's completely different to hurling, because it's not as fast and it's not as good and it's not as enjoyable, and sometimes when you do Di Canio, that I'm waiting for a player that scores a goal in football and he comes out like Di Canio and he's waving his hands and he's going up to the crowd and all that, that'd be some crack watching it in a GAA game. But everything in moderation, Colm. Just keep it simple. But if you score a good goal, you should go out and fist pump into the crowd and you'll give the old crowd something.
Who'll be the first player to score a goal and take their top off?
Has it never been done?
No, they're not in Croke Park. It hasn't.
In football, is it?
Yeah, well, neither.
Either one.
You'd be doing well to take a jersey off.
No, you wouldn't do it in hurling. The helmet would stop it. Yeah, you'd be gone.
I tell you, I'd love to see doing it in football. Is the Galway full forward Cormer?
Oh,
what a man!
He'd
take off the jersey there, and there's a bit of a Wayne Rooney like in that guy. Yeah, I like him.
He'd be like the Incredible Hulk. He'd turn green. He'd just rip the shirt off himself. Yeah. Cormer,
but a great player and an extremely honest player, and that's what I like about him.
Brilliant player. He's one of my favourite players in the game. Yeah. I think the next thing, just before we wrap this up, that's going to be borrowed from soccer is managers wearing suits on the line in their technical area, the hands in their pockets. The next manager that wears a suit, can you imagine the suit deals, the sponsorship deals?
Paul Galvin
is going to become a manager. He wants to get into coaching, and he's going to be on the line in a Pep Guardiola sweater with the tie
from
and
Duns.
The suit. from his own collection, yeah. So he's going
with
to be
Bannister on the back, is it?
Yeah. Right, listen, that's all we have time for. We'll be back on Monday with a great show. Hopefully we'll get someone from the winning team on that one, and we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today. Because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, 'cause I won't see you.